Don't desert me, ladies and gentlemen. We need your listenership. You're welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. Some of the very few Kiwis that are on radio in the United States. The state I've seen none others. Maybe it's because all the Kiwis are just fluoride head aspartame swilling swine. That'd be about right. Because the same thing that's happening there is happening here. And I wanted to give a quick shout out because we've got some people online these days that realise this. One person in particular, we just got this in from a subscriber to our YouTube channel, and he's reposting the radio show each day at his own expense of bandwidth to YouTube every day. And he says, I really appreciate the effort you are putting into fighting the degenerate NWO. I'll keep uploading as many of your radio interviews as I can because I think we all need to work together as much as possible in this fight, and I also just enjoy the show. So many people spend their time on anonymous forums that just bicker amongst themselves and going nowhere, whereas you guys are on the front line, actually putting yourself in danger. Well done, and keep going, even if we lose this battle, which I kind of think we will. At least we tried our very best. At the very best, anything's better than feeling like an elitist's female dog bitch. And it kind of embodies the spirit of the show, because we don't want to stand down at any point. In fact, we will stand up. What you do with a bully is that everything they tell you to do, they do. You have to do the exact opposite. They tell you to shut up, you have to yell loud as you can. They tell you to stop fighting, you have to fight harder than you've ever fought before. They tell you the world's going to end, that means it's within your grasp and they don't want you to have it.
Yeah, no, totally. Thanks. Thanks to Planet Earth Awakens 01. I don't know your name, sorry, mate, but yeah, you're doing us a huge favour, so yeah, thanks for that. We appreciate it.
Yeah, mate. In fact, hell, that's going up on the website. Go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen. We have been given a swath of sponsorship and support over the last week, in fact. It's just kind of coming pouring at us, and you'll notice that the show site looks somewhat different. We've got some very fabulous new people in there. Uncensored.co.nz, Uncensored Magazine, which I'm holding in my hand, the David Dees frequently does the cover art for them. He's decided that Uncensored magazine needs to start going global. They come from the United States. They've come here to New Zealand. And they waited for a decent magazine to come out. And none appeared. So they just made it. Just like this show. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We don't play it. We just make it. And we'll be right back. The wind is going to be.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business.
It's business time, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
It's time to mess with the new world order, it is. And we have a very proud responsibility here to bring you one of our fabulous contributors to the show, the father of Michael New. It's Daniel New, ladies and gentlemen, from GardenMicrobes.com. Daniel, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be there.
It's always nice having guests on the show because it gives everyone a chance to vent, you know, because everything's so terrible.
How's the volume?
Well, I'd love you to explain to me about your son, because as far as I know, it's just basically he refused to wear a UN uniform because he swore an oath to the Constitution and not some charter.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that while a lot of Americans knew the story back when it happened in 95, 96, it's been that long, and the average recruit today, if they join the Army at 18, they were only 3 or 4 years old at the time. So obviously it's going to make a big difference that these kids have a legitimate excuse for not knowing the story, and we've got a big job to get the information out to them. Am I coming through? You got me there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm hearing all kinds of funny little things going on there with the with Skype, and I wasn't sure. But
good. And also, ladies and gentlemen, just to preface this, if you go to the front page of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, you'll see the video there, The Ballad of Michael New, that you can view for yourself.
You were going to play that today sometime, maybe at a break or something.
Were we now? All right. Okay. Well, we'll see if we can. We'll see if we can actually get that done.
If you can find it, that's okay. Maybe you're going to play it tomorrow. I noticed it's funny to me that you're playing your Wednesday thing. I know it's Wednesday there, but the Wednesday song
doesn't
work for us.
It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday here. Is it Tuesday for you there?
Yeah. It's Tuesday, 6:11 a.m. local New Zealand
time. Oh, you're right. Yeah, but you're playing a Wednesday.
We're broadcasting live from the future.
You're right. It's Monday here. And you're playing a Wednesday song, so now you've really got me messed up.
Yeah.
Got me looking forward to Wednesday, though, you did.
Oh, yeah. Hey, don't worry. I'm sure you'll catch up eventually.
Right. Okay.
Hey. What's it like living in Texas these days, man? Because I hear that there's been chemtrails all around. The police are going nuts. What's it like just day-to-day life?
Well, I live in the country, you know, so what the police do, I don't really know about. I don't keep up with them much, but I can definitely see chemtrails out there. Typically, just before a rain, I can see sometimes 2 or 3 and sometimes as many as 14 or 15. Sometimes they're just streaking, and sometimes they're checkerboard patterns, and even now and then, one that just turns a big curve, like the guy's headed home for another load.
Goodness. They were talking on the Alex Jones show, I think, about this, and there's certain types of chemtrailing. Like, some of them have real big tankers, and other ones are just kind of adages to the fuel with a bit of aluminum and barium. And on the Discovery Channel, they did this little documentary to try and disprove it by going to one civilian airport and testing the fuel of all the planes and saying, oh, well, we didn't find any chemtrails, so, yep, it can't be true.
right. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, like trying to go find an elephant in New York City streets, you know, it's just like, oh, well, we can't find any elephants. And you'd just be like, oh, well, you must elephants must not exist.
Exactly. Now, I have a friend who lives about 30 miles from here who keeps a single sideband radio and listens to aviation channels. And he picked them up one day talking about it, two pilots, saying, inviting the other one over for barbecue after work. And he said, I got to go back and get another load before I can be off today. I got started late. And, you know, just chit-chat. But, you know, these are not just contrails coming out of commercial jets that are moving from city to city. They're up there specifically putting something in the air.
And I believe the person who came up with the chemtrails received some description of big magnanimous award, like a Nobel Prize or something like that for geoengineering.
Wow.
Yeah. And G. Edward Griffin's got a documentary coming out, the videos on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. They're talking about dumping between 200 and 300 million cubic tons of aluminium per year. And they're already doing it, and that's their projections for next year. And so there's a huge, huge investment going into all this.
Maybe I should buy aluminium stock for futures.
Yeah. Well, actually, what you'd really want to do is get stock in Monsanto's aluminium-resistant crops.
There
because
you go.
Because they're chemtrailing everywhere, all the aluminium in the soil will stop all the crops from growing. So the only place anybody will be able to get any food will be genetically engineered killer fruit from Monsanto.
Oh, I see. I'm going to have to set up some kind of canopy over my property and just roll it back when the sun is out and there's no chemtrails. And then cover it up again and deflect it all to my neighbor and downstream when it is raining or when it is when we do have chemtrails.
Well, what about garden microbes? I mean, do they eat aluminium? Or?
Aluminium.
You told me they ate up oil and stuff off your...
Oh, they do. But aluminum is a metal and or aluminium. And it's... I doubt that they'll eat it. What would it turn into? You can't transform that stuff into something. Mm-hmm. I suspect they cannot. Now, they could oil or they could fertilizers, pesticides, toxins, but a basic element like aluminum or aluminium is not likely to be something you can transform any more than lead.
Well, whoever comes up with the solution there, who can get aluminium out of soil, will be a rich man. Oh, no, or a dead man.
Right.
More likely. And it's staggering to me. The extent of chemtrails in the United States is far, far, far larger than that in New Zealand. I mean, we've got chemtrails here all the same, but very rarely will I see more than, say, three at a time.
Mm-hmm. And is it more over your populated areas?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I was in Argentina, I guess it was a little over a year ago, maybe 2 years now. And I saw one chemtrail over the Andes Mountains. In all the time I was there, I've been there several times, but the fact that I saw one was disturbing.
Yeah. I mean, it's so pervasive, it's everywhere, right?
If you put it over the snow in the Andes, it will work its way into the aquifers.
Hey, yeah, and I believe there was a couple of guys who did some testing of the snow up on mountain ranges and such like that, and they said it was something like 36 times the recommended dosage of or safe levels of aluminium were in the snow and soil.
Wow.
Like this is big, you know. And on top of that, we've got the Gulf of Oil-Cano crisis coming down on us, which apparently and I don't want to confirm it, quite frankly. Apparently, the North Atlantic Current has shut down.
Right, it's what we call the Gulf Stream here, but it's it's called a North Atlantic or the Atlantic Loop Current. It apparently is, or at least there's evidence that it has, and this is causing the temperature of the waters in the North Atlantic to cool 10 degrees Celsius, cooler than they were a year ago. Now, 1 year doesn't tell you anything because, you know, you need to get a base of 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 or 50 years. But 10 degrees is an alarming change if that's a trend. And it could have tremendous impact on weather all over the Northern Hemisphere, which, of course, will affect the South as well.
Yeah. It's like the day after tomorrow scenario, and it's exactly what they say, you know. And I watched the day after tomorrow after hearing this news, and I ran through it, you know. you
Not
know,
encouraged.
just out of pure disgusted, I want to see everybody die kind of interest, of course. And it seems to me that everybody has such fear when they know that something bad is going to happen to them. And they panic. They don't actually do anything about their situation other than just freak out as it happens to them. This is probably one of the most incorrect responses that people should have to events in these times. You know, you got to be prepared for things, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to turn this speaker off on mute so that you don't hear the phone ringing in the background, but I think we got it. Good grief. Usually I've got a portable phone. I can wander around and you can hear the ducks and the geese and the dogs and the cows, but with the Skype thing, I'm stuck to this little cord. I can only move so far.
Okay. Well, we'll probably get you up on a phone after the break. What were you saying, Will?
Oh, it's obviously going to contribute to more global warming, isn't it? This 10-degree reduction. I didn't know that one. That's amazing, Daniel. The Gulf Stream is the engine for Europe's climate at that latitude, exactly. As far as I understand.
Exactly. Yes, from Greenland, Iceland, and on.
Yeah.
That's just
amazing, and it hasn't penetrated into the. Well, why are we surprised, really? But it just hasn't got into the mainstream news, really, in any significant way.
Amazing, amazing. All they're saying is that oil has gone away, that nature has taken care of it. But I got a phone call, and I got an email just this morning from a guy who says, I'm looking for how much can you guys supply in the way of microbes, and how soon can you get them? Now, that's a bit of an open-ended question. Obviously, there's a limit to our company's manufacturing ability, and I'm a distributor, I don't work in the main plants. I don't know exactly their capabilities, but I know it's very weather-dependent. The warmer it is, the faster you can cook or digest and, you know, make these guys. They're live creatures. You don't just run machines faster. And they have enzymes, and they've got all these little things, and they feed them food and proteins, and they come online over a period of 6 to 8 weeks. And so when somebody asked me that question, I wrote back and I said, look, I smell government money when you ask a question like that. And the price just went up. You guys been jerking us around. I want my tax money back.
Texas feds.
I'm going to tax the government here. So anyway, we were joking back and forth. But I don't know what he's talking about, but he said they're doling out contracts. He asked them, would you like a gallon to go down and test it? And he said, nope, the government won't let you do that. They're doling out contracts right now. So let's see, that's payola. There are going to be some kickbacks. There's going to be money to some politicians. And here we go. So I don't know if we're looking at 10,000 gallons. We couldn't probably supply more than 10 or 12,000 gallons in a month. And that's a small company. But it's going to tax the production ability of every producer in the country, and we still won't be able to do it. But they jolly well better be doing something. And this stuff will have an impact if they can get it in the water. The warmer, the better. They need to be doing it today and not in a month, because the cooler weather for us is going to slow down the operation of everything.
You could move your operation to New Zealand.
I could do that, yeah. We'll clean you guys up in the summer there, and the summer here we can work up here. But the problem is the crisis is up here.
Yeah. It's the supply chain as well that I'm kind of thinking about, because New Zealand's probably the most isolated, one of the most isolated countries on Earth. I mean, we look at the amount of time you have to travel to get to your nearest neighbor. It's 3 hours by flight. The United States, by contrast, you know, nearest neighbors, you've got them right on your border there.
Within rifle range, yeah.
Yeah, you know, thankfully, with the Mexican drug cartel shutting down sections of Arizona, thank goodness there's some good old boys with rifles out there protecting the states. I mean, for goodness sake, you know?
Yes, yes, that is really, I think that's one of the few things that has kept the New World Order at bay, and tyranny in general at bay, is the fact that the population is armed here. And I think that has a trickle-down effect, if you will, to Europe and to all Western and civilized countries, that there's some liberty here because some of us are armed. And when we're not, it will all be gone.
Yeah, yeah. You know, these New World Order puppets and shills and everything, they say, what about the children? What about the children? But when we say it, it's almost as if it's lost its meaning. You know, we've got new generations that have yet to be born who will know nothing of freedom, and they will never even knew it existed.
Right.
Because everybody, everybody who believed in freedom and everybody who knew what it was has been put in a camp or been exterminated.
Died off.
You know, right. this is the dark future that's being planned. You know, it's not just foretold as it is, it actually is, but it's also very, very well planned, right?
Yes.
But as always, you know, you look back through history, the best laid plans of mice and men.
I was just thinking of that, yes.
Yeah,
I'm thinking the same words, and frequently people do do things that mess up their plans, and it slows down their timetable. And I mean, obviously George Orwell thought 1984. A lot of people thought the year 2000, but they're still working at it. But it doesn't mean that they've gone away.
Yeah, that as soon as you beat them back one way, they'll come back at you another way.
Sure, you know? Sure, sweeping back the tide.
Yeah. Well, it's not so much sweeping back the tide. It's a perennial problem, you see. Every generation has some form of corruption or tyranny that they have to overthrow in their time. And whether or not you were people like it was in the 60s going off to fight Vietnam, you know, which wasn't... and then later on you find out that all of these are just staged provocations and all of this, right?
Sure, 55,000 dead men later.
Mm-hmm. And what respect does that have for the veterans of the United States who are fighting to defend themselves? You know?
Not much when they take away their pensions.
Yeah.
Well, or cut their foreign bankers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know, you said these people are perennial. I tend to think weeds are evergreen.
Yep.
And they come up faster than the rest.
Absolutely. Let's take a break.
It's easy to come up fast when you're a liar. Listen to the news. We'll be right back. Freedom Radio, and we're just discussing over the break how much we appreciate having an intelligent listenership who we don't have to dumb it down for. And those of you who listened to last Friday's show with me and Chris, you recall we gave you a rowdy round of applause congratulating you listeners for being so apt as to be listening to American Freedom Radio. Just like Fabulous Intel Hub, which is up after this show, and Project Gulf Impact, that have been doing amazing investigative journalism in regards to the BP Gulf oil cano. Very, very onto it, fellas. Now, Daniel, I wanted to talk about Michael New, and I wanted to think about the backstory and what the struggle has been like, specifically the details. What's he been going through? How has the military complex reacted to him refusing to wear the blue belt of fascism?
Well, first of all, and for those, maybe I should just give you a little quick background on what happened, because I know a lot of your listeners do not remember the story. Excuse me. Especially if they are less than 35 years old. They were kids at the time when they were 15 years ago. They were not at 20 years old. You're usually not thinking about world events. So In 1995, he was in the Army, and he was stationed in Germany, when he was told that he would be going on a deployment to Macedonia with the U.S. Army. And then he was told, but you'll be wearing a blue hat and be serving a general from Finland, not an American officer, and you'll be reporting to him. And at that point, Mike just said, you know, look, guys, I didn't take an oath to the United Nations. I didn't sign a contract with the United Nations. My oath is to the Constitution of the United States of America. So if it's all the same to you, I'll take a transfer, or I'll stay home and send somebody else. I didn't volunteer for this mess, and it's one thing if you want to take volunteers, but I don't think you can force me to serve a foreign power against my will. Well, the reaction was really strong, and they told him basically, look, you obey orders or you go to prison. That's your two choices. And he said, okay, I want to see the basis, the legal basis of the order. Well, they scrambled around, took him a while, and finally they came up with an executive order. And it's called PDD 25. It's the order that it's the executive order that President Clinton issued, which set forth the terms in which President Clinton authorized President Clinton. So I want you to be sure that you grasp that: to ignore Congress, to ignore statutory law, to ignore the Constitution, and to put American soldiers under the United Nations on his terms. So Mike said, "Okay, fine, let me see it." They said, "Well, you're not going to be allowed to see it. It's classified. Don't just take our word for it." And at that point, Mike laughed and he said, "Come on, guys." He said, "This is not the Soviet Union. You can't just make up stuff like that and tell me it's law." And they said, "Well, it's precisely what we're doing, and you're going to obey the orders." And he said, "To the contrary, I am not going to obey the order." And he gave the chain of command total notice. He said, "I think the order may well be illegal or unconstitutional, and therefore I'm not going to obey it." And they said, "Well, you do that at your own peril. You could well go to prison, and that's what we'll try to do." And so he understood that, and he did go up the chain of command. It wasn't like he surprised them. And he reported on October the 10th of 95, and just said he came out in a green cap and an American battle dress uniform, authorized uniform, not a blue cap and blue scarf and UN patch on his right shoulder. He had an American flag on his right shoulder. So at that point, they arrested him and removed him from formation. They didn't lock him up. They just restricted him to the base, and they court-martialed him. And at the court-martial, the judge said, I mean, we had a mountain of evidence that proved conclusively that this order, first of all, was a violation of Army regulations, because the Army regs are real specific about what you can and cannot put on a uniform. They hadn't bothered to change the regulations. Secondly, it was a violation of statutory law, and we believe certainly a violation of constitutional law. And so they stumbled around. They brought in over 40 attorneys from the Pentagon to stay up at night and try to figure this out. Mike laughed about it. He said, you know, all that sleep deprivation back at basic training that I got, now that I'm they're getting more sleep deprivation than I did, because they're trying to figure out what to do. And their answer was that the judge delivers the answer to the jury or the panel when he said, gentlemen, I have looked at the evidence. I have decided the order was lawful. Therefore, you will not be allowed to see any evidence in this case. All you're going to decide is one question: did this soldier or did he not obey that order? And of course he disobeyed the order. That was not the question. The whole question was why. And it took them about 15 to 20 minutes to find him guilty, because they wanted to finish their coffee before they came back. And then they gave him the task of a sentence, which they were asking for prison, 11 worth, for disobeying this order. And they came back with a bad conduct discharge, which meant that on the one hand, had it been a general discharge, he would have just been sent home. Or even a less than honorable, but they gave him the bad conduct, which guaranteed that he could appeal the case all the way to the Supreme Court without putting him in jail. And so he's not suffered any jail time. He wasn't restricted. He lost some privileges, like you cannot buy goodies at the PX, at the base exchange. You can't be buried in a military cemetery and that sort of thing, unless you make large donations to a Democratic candidate for something or another. But and that's actually a reference to something that has happened in the past, where that has happened. But he personally was not that put upon, I suppose. You know, he had a job offers. He had scholarship offers, full scholarship offers to college to be paid, to university. There were a lot of people wanted a piece of that action to say, look, the American government can take away his benefits, his GI Bill, and that sort of thing. But there's, I mean, the government can take it away, but there's nothing to keep the American people from giving it back to him. And so they proceeded to do that. So he lives as a civilian. He married a girl from Germany, so has a war bride, I suppose, or a peacekeeping bride. I'm not sure what. And they now have a little boy, just going on 2 years old. And they live in the Houston, Texas area, which is way too close to the Gulf of Texas. Some people call it the Gulf of Mexico on the maps, but we're going to change that. And we were going to change that. Right now, with all that oil, I think we don't want to rock that boat. But anyway, that's where we are. We went all the way to the Supreme Court on the military side, and they refused to hear it. Then we went all the way to the Supreme Court on the civilian side because we sued the Pentagon, and they refused to hear it again. And so we've lost the case. However, we've not lost the fight because it's not over until we quit. And it's not about a bad conduct discharge. It's not about one soldier. It's about whether or not American soldiers, or for that matter, New Zealand or Australian soldiers, can be forced to serve a foreign power against their will. Because if we are nothing but mercenaries who can be sent off to fight for foreign powers or to, you know, to represent the military force of a foreign power, then we're back to feudalism. We're back to the ability of the king to send his archers off to Spain to fight the French or to France to fight the Spanish. There's no real difference. And if you can't defend your own country, then, you know, you've got to ask yourself, does my country exist? Are we a free country or not?
Do we have any sovereignty left?
That is exactly the question. As Mike says on the video, which is up on the website at MikeNew.com, by the way, and you can watch it for free there, he says, look, the goal here really is a world government. They've got all of the elements of a government except for three things. They've got a chief of state or a head of state. They've got a legislative body in the General Assembly and in the Security Council. They've got a World Bank. They've got a population. They claim the population of the Earth. They've got the only three things they don't have are a world tax, which they're working on, a world court they have. Then the last thing is they don't have the army, the military, to enforce the orders of the court and the taxation system. And that's what they're trying to make him, he said. So at this point, he says, you know, all they need left is somebody to enforce their edicts, and that's what they're in the process of doing. I would submit now that they actually do. We won an empty victory because they don't use the blue hats. But what do you have in Iraq and if Afghanistan? Well, Afghanistan is now NATO, but that's an international agency which reports to the United Nations. NATO is subject to the United Nations. What you have in Iraq is an international expeditionary force, that's a great name, with a blue patch on your right shoulder, not an American flag, or British flag, or whatever country you're from. So, I suggest...
Well, it's interesting that you sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. I'm just going to say we're not...
It's interesting about where the flags come from. Like the British East India Trading Company... Mm-hmm. Is the base model for the American flag. Have you ever seen the East India Trading Company flag?
I have. I think that's very interesting. It's nice to know that we're a commercial venture here, that we're a franchise.
Yeah. And that's what the gold band around the American flag on a lot of the modern uniforms means, is that you're fighting for America the corporation, not America the sovereign nation.
Right. Well, according to the flag code, the gold fringe indicates a maritime flag or a maritime law. So you're right, but and in a civilian flag should not have the gold fringe at all.
Have you guys seen the other flag proposal, the all-seeing eye one?
With the triangle and the eye?
Yeah, the eye of Horus, and there's
just like we've got on the
beams.
Yeah, it's like we have on the dollar bill.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all occultic anyway. 50 pentagrams on the... U.S. flags from the same people, too.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and also I was watching Family Guy the other night, and they walk into a library, and there's this one book that you can see this big triangle with an eye in the middle on it. You know, and it's in the background while they're speaking during the whole scene, you know, and nobody else notices these little things, you know. I mean, we notice, okay, because we know about these sort of things, but the general public does not. And then when we say, hey, look, it's everywhere, man, okay, look at this. Look at this Glee Club, okay, talks about the New World Order. Look at this children's show about cows, talks about New World Order, you know. Take your vaccines, drink your fluoride, watch TV, and don't talk to your kids. That's a surefire road to success for your country's sovereignty.
Right,
it's completely viral, eh? That thread, that whole theme is so viral amongst children's cartoons. It's so evil. You can look on YouTube, and you can skim through for hours how many there are.
Yes,
it's beyond belief.
Yes. Well, we certainly live in an information age. Now, I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin. Are you familiar with his case?
I interviewed him one time. Oh, no. His secretary interviewed him.
Okay. Ducky Hemingway, is that who you talked to? Or?
No. It was a girl. I forget her name.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I'm very familiar with Terry Lake, and it's very rare that you actually have people of high stature, in particular, really stick their neck out and do this kind of thing with the credibility and all the war medals and everything that he's got to call out Barack H. O'Barry as as an illegitimate president and refuse to follow orders in Afghanistan.
Right.
You're dang right. That's exactly what he should have done, you know. And that's what Michael New reminded me of.
Exactly. And I've talked to Colonel Lakin, and I spoke to him the other day, and he said, I've got good news. He said, it looks to me like right now, it looks like maybe I'm only going to go to prison for a year and a half instead of 5 years. I said, oh, my goodness, Terry, don't tell me that. I mean, that's the good news. I don't want to hear the bad news. I mean, come on. And so I spoke to him about trying to raise some support for him, and he said, well, I just hate to ask people for money. I said, come on, Terry, what's the matter with you? You have a martyr complex, I can tell. You just, you know, you want to take this on the chin. And he said, no, he said, I'm worried about my family, about how they're going to eat while I'm in prison. And that's what began to bother me, and that's when I said, look, you got to let people help you. You just got to let them know about the case and know where they can support you.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things we want to do on this show, is make sure that the people who need help get it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back.
Look at me driving, and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command, because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, in a holocaust, in a holocaust, in a holocaust, in a holocaust.
It's a holocaust.
In a holocaust.
Welcome back. Yeah. We're getting aggressive. At the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We have Daniel New here with us, the father of Michael New, who, unlike many of the jellyfish spineless armchair patriots out there, really gets behind the cause. And you were telling us about a possible, what was it called? Where you shoot the blue helmets?
Oh, we suggested that we have a tournament, and let anybody enter the tournament on a local level. They have such a thing in archery where they do a postal tournament. If you enter the tournament, they send you the targets. You pay the entry fee. They send you the targets. And then you take them down to the archery range or to the shooting range, and there will be someone certified there who will certify that you actually shot this target. And so you shoot the target, you send it in. The best guys then get to go to the next round and so on up. So that way you could all do the preliminary shooting locally. So we suggested we use blue helmets for targets. And in the end, we decided to, because it would be too expensive to supply the demand of thousands and thousands of helmets, we decided instead to use United Nations logo, which is already designed like a target. It's really cool, round and circular, little lines on it and everything. And so we were going to send out these targets and let people shoot at them, and then the winners would be at, we'd put those together and have regional tournaments, and then we'd go up to a national or international tournament. And I never got it. We were going to offer, and we had the commitments that we could have offered a $10,000 first prize, and we were getting emails and letters from people around the world saying, I want in on this. And I think with the economy going like it is, maybe we ought to do it again, because, you know, people could use an extra $10,000, and it would be a quite fun thing to do. We need a range out in Nevada somewhere where we can get some long-distance shooting. And, of course, the complaint right away was, what about us pistol shooters? We want a pistol tournament to shoot at blue helmets. And so, you know, everybody's complaining, so... And then they wanted one for women.
Everybody's complaining because there aren't enough UN helmets to shoot.
Exactly. Then this guy that owns a sporting goods store said, look, I mean, a army surplus store. He said, look, I'll supply all the helmets if you'll paint them blue. And I got another guy said, I'll supply the paint. So we were going to take a horse trailer out to Nevada and get all these helmets and spray paint them blue. And then we were going to have this tournament where people – and they wrote this up. It was written up in New York Times and Pravda. I've seen this article in Pravda with my name in it, and they were talking about targets. It was hilarious. But anyway, they got the message. They got almost as good a message without spending any money.
Yeah. And that's the power of the media, right? You know, yes. if you can get something in there, they usually like sensational stories, isn't that?
Sure.
Isn't that about right?
Sure.
You know,
but the very idea that Americans would contemplate shooting in a blue helmet was just shocking to these New York liberals and to these internationalists. And once it goes right back to an unarmed population is a victim, and an armed population still has the potential to be free.
How dare you shoot at those peacekeeping Blue Lodge, UN.
Oh, I was.
What did I expect? That would be very, very
helmets. Goodness. Yeah, but you know, I hear these conspiracy theories about how there's going to be all these thousands of Russian soldiers and who knows, Mongolians or whatever they are, and they're all going to be out there and they're hiding in all the military bases, and they're going to try to take over the United States. You know, that's baloney. That's not going to happen. That is a best case scenario. Good grief.
Red Dawn or something.
Yeah, I mean, bring it on. And that's a patriot's wet dream, man. I tell you what, there's more guns in households than there are in armories in this country. And I bought a French rifle the other day. It's a 308 that's been rechambered and redesigned into a semi-automatic. And I bought it just for the novelty of it. And I looked at the thing, and here I was at a gun show in Dallas. And I looked at that gun, and I said to the guy, I said, boy, that gun's in great shape. And he smiled, and he said, well, you know the French. It's probably been thrown down more than it's been fired. And but it came with a cleaning kit. It's in really good shape. And I took the cleaning kit apart, and sure enough, the white flag is missing. So it is a French rifle.
Poor French, always coughing up.
Yes. Look, if you have listeners in Paris, I apologize. But it's somebody's got to be the butt of the jokes.
Drop the gun, put the flag, and ran to Italy.
Yes, exactly. To the Riviera, anyway.
Well, you know what's interesting? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know why in France they plant trees on both sides of the streets and all of the roads and the country lanes? It's so that the German armies march in the shade.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Sorry, I'm enough French bashing.
Well, thank God that the French resistance didn't just say, oh, well, let's give up. It was vive la résistance.
Yes. In all fairness, the French did resist, and they resisted mightily, and they should be commended for it. Yeah, I don't want to paint an unfair picture there. There were some very brave people, and they died. They paid a lot, heavy price for it.
Yeah. Not resisting a new world, though, are they?
No, they are. They're resisting it.
I think they were.
Yes. Well, the people are. The protests that they have there are spectacular in New Zealand to get maybe a couple of hundred people to come out to a protest that's
significance. That's just protests or what?
Well, a protest against the Search and Surveillance Bill, which is like the New Zealand version of the Patriot Act, for example, only drew 300 people. But the French, they mobilise, and tens of thousands of people that march in the streets over things like making sure that they have health care available and stuff like this.
And more taxation available, and more state available, and more all the wrong things.
Well, and also benefits from the government. Yeah, and kidnapping their employers, which I found was one of the most favourite French protests I've ever seen, about selling their companies out and outsourcing their workforce, which I thought was great. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest is Dan New, and we'll be right back after the break. VinnieEastwoodShow.com. The Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, incidentally, AmericanFreedomRadio.com, which I suggest you go to because there's some really, really good shows on this network, quite frankly. I don't get paid to give out plugs or anything, and as far as I'm concerned, I refuse to lend my name to anything I don't personally believe in or love to the core. And believe me, I love American Freedom Radio, man. You just can't stop me. Our special guest is Daniel New, father of Michael New from MikeNew.com. We're talking about UN and the global one world government slime banker takeover and various other little thingies about sovereignty and how diplomatic relations and friendships with countries have been replaced instead by enforced fascist international treaties, you know? Back in the days of the American Revolution, the French helped the Americans gain their independence. And the French themselves overthrew the bourgeoisie during the French Revolution. Liberty is out there, ladies and gentlemen. And you shouldn't have to bind yourself to other countries because of a treaty. You do it because of common belief. Belief in freedom. Belief in liberty. UN doesn't seem to believe in any of that.
The French Revolution was totally fake, though, man. Like, the French Revolution was totally Illuminati contrived, funded, occultic. And that's why they got involved with the American Revolution. And that's why you have a Statue of Liberty gifted to them by guess who? No, so, like, they're not, yeah.
See, there's two sides to every story, isn't there?
Well, I don't even know if it's two sides, man. I find, like, the French Revolution a really, really poor example of a altruistic sort of, yeah.
Well, it shows how it can really go bad, how a revolution can, is such a dangerous thing. And in the end, when you don't come up with something in the way of control, you wind up with chaos followed by, and mob action followed by a strong man, with a Napoleon in that case, who comes in and the people will beg for a dictator before it's over just to stop the chaos.
Hey, that's true, isn't it? And that's just happened in New Zealand. Our Prime Minister allegedly passed legislation in a night, and we only have one House of Parliament here, to grant him the ability to change any law he sees fit.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me there was chaos in the streets, and
No. There was nothing. Well, it's like the Christchurch earthquake. You know, very very big event here in New Zealand. You know, 7.1 was it magnitude quake? A pretty big shake up anyway. And he's decided, oh well, you know, one city's had a little bit of difficulty with the quake, and so we need to be able to give dictatorial power to the executive branch. Of course.
Sure.
Thank you, John Key. I'm sure that's not dangerous. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back with more dangerous talk.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't know the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery.
They bring fucking loaner to you. Don't you love being a commercial slave, ladies and gentlemen? Enough money to pay off all the debt. It reminds me of when Wellington, the capital city here in New Zealand, on Halloween of 2008, a large group of people dressed as zombies decided that they would have a protest outside Parliament. What do we want? Brains. When do we want it? Brains. Now...
That's hilarious. And how many of them got elected... And how many of them got elected to Parliament?
Apparently half the crowd. Now,
I thought zombie marches happened every day, Vinny. I thought that was the counting your busy road.
That's what we're all about.
Oh, yeah. But they don't crave brains, ironically enough. They crave things which destroy them.
MSG, fluoride.
Yes.
Give me fluoride.
Have you seen this new interview with... Have you seen this new interview with a zombie that Thomas Woods has done?
No.
Go to www.interviewwithazombie.com. Imagine it wasn't taken. Thomas Woods got so tired. Yeah, he's written 10 books. He's a great patriot, very articulate man. Written a lot of books about government and freedom. And but he says every time he gets on a radio show, this guy's like a zombie. You know, he starts saying, "Ah, neo-Confederate. Yeah, you're a racist. Yeah, you're slavery, pro-slavery." So he arranged and hired his own zombie to do an interview, and it's fantastic. And so the guy holds up a book and he says, "Book." So then Woods gets to talk about it, and then he says, "Oh, neo-Confederate." He points at him. This goes on, slavery. And so Woods just explains in each case how nullification, for example, which is his thing right now, is older than the Confederacy. Thomas Jefferson suggested it. Not only suggested it, they did it. The northern states wouldn't enforce federal laws for runaway slaves. And so nullification is an old American tradition. And you say, racist. Thinking up all these words, and at one point, all right, so it's a funny thing. You got to watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at it right now. Now, what is state nullification specifically? I'm quite interested in this.
Okay, the basic concept is, and it's based upon It's based upon a very old political doctrine that goes back way back into English history and has roots in the Bible. The bottom line is that a lower magistrate does not have to obey the order or the edict of a higher magistrate when that order is illegal. It's exactly what Michael New did. In his own case, as an individual, he said, that order is null and void to me. You cannot make me obey it. Now, he's just one man in the whole army. But in the case of Oliver Cromwell, it was done in England, in which the citizens, you know, and Parliament refused to obey the king and to give him the tax money until he would obey the law. And so they nullified his desire to have a war or to raise the money or the taxes. And so the same thing happens in American history, where you have states, you have an edict. It's even in the Constitution about runaway slaves. And you have an edict from the federal government that says, if you catch a runaway slave, you have to send him back to the South. Now, the Minnesotas passed a law that said, we're not going to do it. You cannot make us do it. If these guys get here one way or the other, they're free as far as we're concerned. And if you catch some guy and you say, wow, he looks to us like, you know, he meets the description. Well, sure he does. He's dark-complected. He's got very dark-complected. He's got kinky hair. He's got dark brown eyes. He's obviously the right guy. You're going to drag him off and kidnap him. And they said, we're not going to put up with this kidnapping nonsense, and we're not going to enforce your law. So the northern states actually practiced it more than the southern states, but it's been around for a long time. You cannot make a state obey a law, because the greatest court we have in this country is not the Supreme Court, but the court of public opinion. And when they can get their state legislature to say no, then the states can nullify that federal law in their borders of that state. It's a pretty neat concept.
Hey, well, that's basically like one of the backstops of sovereignty, isn't it? You know,
exactly.
The right to determine one's own laws, one's own state of being, and
that's why we say that the states have a degree of sovereignty. They don't have to obey everything they're told to do. The federal government was supposed to be our servant, not our master. And that seems to have been forgotten along the road, but some of the states are developing a backbone here, and they're beginning to say, well, as it was with Sheriff Richard Mack, when he was ordered, all sheriffs were ordered to enforce the Brady Bill and to do the gun checks, the background checks when someone wants to buy a gun, and Richard Mack sued the federal government. He said, I'm an elected sheriff. I don't report to you. I report to the people of my county. And yeah. ten other sheriffs joined him in that lawsuit. They went all the way to the Supreme Court. And in the end, the Supreme Court ruled in their favor and said, you're right. He's an elected local official. We cannot force him to obey a federal edict, an unfunded mandate of a federal law. He's a local officer. Pretty neat. Yep. The balance of powers and the separation of powers is very important.
People don't understand this basic premise, do they, Daniel? And this is why John Key has been able to get, you know, power as complete dictator here in New Zealand now. It's because even if he brought it up with people and made people understand that he's passed a bill to give him, you know, the complete discretion of the country at his own whim, people would just say, well, he is Prime Minister. Shouldn't the Prime Minister be able to make any law he wants? So because people don't understand the fundamentals of freedom and limited government. And whenever you have, like, the tenets of freedom are not taught in school, and yep. they're not taught in most homes. You know, they teach our kids all about the All Blacks, all about, you know, how to, I don't know, be depravic or whatever, but nothing about the tenets of liberty to protect yourself, being able to have the freedom to sit there and be a fluoride head and watch rugby all day.
Exactly.
You know, you're not going to have that without basic liberties. And, yeah, it's just that flawed understanding that needs to be corrected somehow. If you have this conversation with socialists, however, though, they always talk about the bounds of freedom, have you noticed? If you ever bring up this conversation with socialists, they'd always say, well, freedom should have limits. Straight off the bat, before you've talked about, you know, you're not promoting anarchy or anything.
No.
And you just go, well, what? They go, well, what limits should there be to freedom? And freedom itself is a misnomer and term. You know, they always do it, Avani. Do you find that scumbag Guy Abbott online there?
Oh, yeah.
It's his line.
Hey, what's he saying, that I'm some Zionist agent or something like that? You know, that's why I tell my Zionist jokes. You know, what do an Israeli tank crew say when they see a group of Palestinian children? They say shalom.
That's
why you don't take Israelis out for Turkish kebabs, because they'll shoot at the hummus.
Oh my. Well, I think you just
made the hummus, though, Vinny.
I think you just lost your
right.
sponsors.
And that's why Israelis hate chickpeas as well, because they could be working for hummus too.
Oh my, my.
You know,
we've
got to be able to make fun of ourselves as well, you know. I mean, we're going to be having on Chris Van Ryn from Kyoto Gaza as a small contingent of Kiwis that are joining a 500-vehicle convoy that is going to try and breach the blockade along with 60-ship flotilla of Gaza to bring in food, medical supplies, building supplies, things of this nature, which Gaza has been cut off from for quite some time. I've met some people from Gaza, and I've met some people from Israel, and they all agree that whatever the United States and Israel are talking about on the mainstream media, it is just absolutely not true. It is the worst situation that you've ever seen in your life in those places. Okay, yes. That's the truth of it. And you don't
need people to
understand
go there.
Suffering. You can't let people suffer and do nothing. Okay, that is the point.
We need people to go there and bring about the Israeli peace pact and the end of the world. That's the solution. Well, this is the whole problem.
Let's go back to the hummus.
You know, I think people should fix their own problems and let the Palestinians fix their own problems, and we fix our own problems. But instead, especially the left, they want to go, oh, I know about historical grievances. I know what happened in Cambodia, and you know, they talk about, no, you've got a war in your own backyard, you idiots, you know, and they all go funding things that all go offshore, they all go fund international causes, oh, we're going to have a flotilla or a boat somewhere across the planet, like that's really going to stop, you know, thousands of years worth of tensions. It's unbelievable.
Take the example. We'll take the example locally here in New Zealand. A couple of farm boys managed to get their dad saved from this horrible swine flu case because they gave him intravenous vitamin C.
Intravenous vitamin C,
which has a 75-year pedigree, and just a few farm boys are now on the verge of actually getting it regularly used. It's already illegal medicine here in New Zealand, but doctors don't use it, okay? And the pharma companies don't want them to use it because it's incredibly cheap and incredibly effective. And it'll put them out of business.
But
and a
why didn't
of
the left wing
manage to change this?
Why didn't the leftists do that, Vinny? Why doesn't Greenpeace talk about the Gulf Stream?
Aren't they funded by the Rockefeller Foundation or something?
Exactly, and that's why all these types who belong to those groups are also part of peace in Gaza and all that sort of crap, because it's. It's, you know, it's so cliche, man. They'd rather focus on someone else. It's point over there. It's all part of this distraction that the mainstream media is part of also.
Yeah.
It's always, look at them over there because we're so perfect here and we're so lucky. But we're having enough freedom to run by the minute.
That's right. Watch this hand. Where's the pea? Where's the chickpea? It's under the shell. Yeah, which shell?
Hey, and that's why I like people like Joe Carolan. I mean, despite the fact that he's an open socialist, he actually does focus very much on real issues here at home. And he's a very, very great guest. We've had him on the show a couple of times. He's originally from Ireland. And he keeps the international perspective with a focus on the struggles here at home for people who are have terrible living conditions and are in the hardest paid jobs, being knocked around by their bosses and stuff like that, you know. That's somebody
Joe does a good job on the ground. Then he takes a stab at us and says, oh, you guys are all intellectual. I'm doing the real work on the ground. You know, you guys are all intellectual. Yeah, because you're never going to stop the problem, Joe. You're never going to stop fractional reserve banking. Yeah, making, you know, a bank can take $1 and they can loan out 10, and then they can, each of those dollars, they can charge 8% interest. They're making 80%. And then they use that fiat money to go and buy more gold, and so they can lend out even more upon their deposits. And that's a problem.
Yeah, it's perpetual motion, but it's going to end. It's
and a, Yeah.
Ponzi scheme.
But a socialist is not going to stop that.
No. Oh, they're gonna... not. Hey, by the way, I'd like to mention to you guys that we have a website called unwatch.com for those who would like to keep up with the United Nations and some things that they're doing. And people can sign up for a little bit of little newsletters and things. We don't send many, but we keep some very interesting articles there about the United Nations. And I know that the UN people, we get a lot of hits from Switzerland and New York. So we know that we get watched regularly. And unwatch.com, and that's where you can find get these signs that say this is a UN-free zone. United Nations keep out. We sell these little signs and T-shirts and things.
Oh, that's great.
I need them around my town.
There you go.
No, they well, we could do that. They are trying to make your town a UN reservation zone, aren't they, Will?
They are. They're trying to make the whole of Auckland UN reservation, though.
Holy
They're out West Auckland. They're out in the Gulf Islands where I am. They're saying, oh, but UNESCO's great. It's gonna, they're going to conserve our native animals, and they're going to do all this, that, and the other. And, look, I'm all for conservation too, but not their brand of eugenic style. You know, wipe everyone out conservation.
Oh, come on, Will. You're just being negative.
Yeah. And they go, oh, how can you doubt the UN? I'm just like, oh, you know, because they might give a dog a bone occasionally. But 95% of their actions, you know, they've sterilized millions of people. They've indebted whole continents.
And they're still doing that.
People. Yeah. Killed thousands at a time by disarming them all over the world. They've done this. Multiple case studies. They've through their IMF arm, they've got 17 arms, as we all know. They've indebted most of Africa and then paid off people like Mugabe to default on loans and drive them into hyperinflation so the globalists own them.
Sure, and in the meantime, the infrastructure goes to the wealthy bankers who get to reap the profits.
And then these supposedly educated people with university degrees and stuff, look at me, like, you right-winger, why don't you like the UN? You know, what's your problem?
Brains. Or,
you know?
They're a bunch of zombies. After you watch
it blows me away.
Yes.
It's like if you had a serial killer, and he went around, you know, raping people and poisoning people and everything else, but then he decided to give everyone in town Christmas cards. Mm-hmm. And presents at Christmas. And I said,
I said,
Mr. Manson, I don't want your present. I don't want your card on my lounge. And
it's like
my neighbor's coming to me and saying, what's your problem? Well, you know, well, why don't you take the card from him? He's just trying to be nice. Well, that's like these UN promoters. Mm-hmm. They only see like a first level, no, the UN's for peace. What's your problem?
It's a pretty well-known fact that the Serial Killers Union is in favor of arms control and gun control.
Serial Killers Union.
Yeah, I mean, they're in favor of gun control. They don't want anybody to have guns because it makes their job more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, seriously, that's why porcupines are real hard to tread on.
That's really right. Or hedgehogs, that's right. That's right. You know, these years ago in the 50s and 60s, the towns of San Jose, California, and Berkeley, California, passed local ordinances that said these are nuclear-free zones. And at the time, and I remember those days, which kind of gives me away a bit, but we used to laugh at that. We'd say, you know, these idiots, what are they going to do? They pass an ordinance, and so the Russians are not allowed to drop a bomb on their town because it's a nuclear-free zone. Well, as it was explained to me by a former ACLU attorney, he said, well, you guys are laughing about it, but what they did was they shaped the debate. They shaped the political debate, and today the California energy crisis can be directly attributed to 30 years ago when they were passing little nuclear-free zones and on a municipal level, and it seemed so harmless, and it was sort of laughable, but they helped shape the public debate over whether or not they were going to have nuclear. Now, the same thing has happened. And so we took that strategy and we came up with a UN free zone ordinance. We actually got a town in Utah to pass it. And then a county in Oregon passed it to pass a UN free zone that banned the United Nations in their county in Oregon. We should talk about that after the break.
Indeed we will. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back with our guest Daniel New after the break. Unity, please don't desert me. Yes, we are. I wanna jam it with you. We wanna include everybody in this wonderful jam session that we're having here. Talking over the break about how it's kind of different to try and have an intelligent debate on radio. I mean, because we're fortunate to have an intelligent listenership here at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We don't have to dumb things down, and we can talk about complex issues, and we can bring in reference points through history and all these different anecdotes to the play, so that you really learn something. And we're consistently surprised by the sheer amount of knowledge that we have passing through this show. I mean, I'm in contact with activists all the time here in New Zealand, and I learn directly from the horse's mouth what's going on in my country. And everybody else that comes on the show, either as guests like Daniel New here or my co-host Will, do immense amounts of research and community outreach as well. And the vast majority of people would benefit from doing such a thing. Wouldn't you agree, guys?
You mean think for themselves?
Yeah, well, be active. Be active in your local community.
Yeah, pass it on. Don't be so greedy and selfish and just, you know, go about your own life. You need to take it to the community. You know, we have a great debt to what our forefathers did, and we need to pass it on. We can't just suck it, you know, just take it and not pass it on to the next generation.
Yeah, and that's
a debt
that I'm proud.
It does get hard at the community level.
That's a debt that I'm proud to pay, you know, because I find that there's two forms of debt. There's social debt and there's monetary debt. The monetary debt is made up out of nothing, and the social debt is only made out of something.
That's right. That's right.
So your sort of conservative libertarian values wouldn't be out of place in your hometown. Would that be fair to say, Daniel?
No, I think the values in general are very much in line in our communities, even though there's a lot of ignorance about details and current events. But they sense that something's very wrong, and they sense universally now that bad things are about to happen. I mean, as bad as it is, it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. I don't talk to anyone who doesn't see that.
Yeah, yeah.
See, when me and Vinny go out, we're dealing with a completely different kettle of fish. We're dealing with literal fish who just swim with the tide.
Yeah.
And it's really, really difficult. When I try and get involved in local politics in my area, the sort of people involved, they're not ignorant, obviously. They're not sitting at home watching TV, but what I call mainstream smart people.
Mm-hmm.
They know everything their thinking they're supposed to know, nothing more.
Their thinking has been shaped, though, by the telly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I talk about small government, regulated government, things like that, and they're afraid of that and see that as risky for society. They see that as dangerous.
Wow.
And I'm like, why aren't you threatened by big government? Amazing. Look what it does through history. And they're just, no. It's kind of like if you told someone to convert $10,000 today into gold, they would say gold's risky and be afraid of doing that. Yeah?
Well, I suppose it is.
And want to hang on to their dollars.
It's a commodity.
But, you know, gold's got hundreds of years of history of historical value.
Yeah.
And
it's not near as risky as the stock market. How low can a stock go?
It's not as risky as the Kiwi dollar or the U.S. dollar.
Exactly. They can easily, I mean, obviously, you know, we bought gasoline when I was a kid for 12, 15, 19 cents a gallon. And yet, you know, you could buy it for today. You can still buy it for two silver dimes. You can still buy a gallon of gas. But not for two debased dimes. Just they would have to be silver. So that's interesting.
Yeah, debased.
Yeah, well, they're made of copper and zinc. Yeah.
You think New Zealand, being such a small country, such a small place, and such a young country, it would be easy to kind of get through to people and sort of, you know, strike a chord with the liberty in them. But it's like, it's as if they've been brainwashed for 1,000 years.
Well, do you think that it has something to do with subsidies? When people take a subsidy, whether it's an agricultural subsidy or welfare or some kind of a so-called entitlement, do you think that sort of stultifies their brain, or they don't dare think it might endanger their income?
I think it, yeah, they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them, supposedly.
Exactly,
and
exactly.
That's the government, so.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten a free, what they call an education, for free. They don't dare speak out against it because it makes you look like some kind of a Bolshevik or something, or worse. I mean, not a Bolshevik, but, you know, more of an elitist that you don't believe in education. So I'm just suggesting... Go ahead.
What sort of model do you believe in for society? Do you believe in no taxation, complete taxation, somewhere in between?
I think a level of taxation is probably essential. I'm absolutely opposed to property taxes. I think that, you know, in fact, I bought a shirt over the weekend at this Tea Party rally that said, abolish property taxes. I paid for it. It's mine. But the fact is, if you don't pay your property tax every year in the United States, you'll find out who owns that property. The sheriff will sell your property from the courthouse, and from the courthouse steps by law.
I mean, and you probably have without even telling you about it.
No, he'll tell
you. Has the Tea Party movement been infiltrated, Mr. Richard, in your opinion? Because it's all over New Zealand TV at the moment. It's in the latest Time magazine, yeah. Reading about it last night.
Has it been infiltrated by what?
Well,
by mainstream Illuminati-controlled Republican scum.
Trotskyite.
It's definitely influenced by Republicans, and part of the reason for that is that the Republicans offer the only alternative to those who are in power. The Tea Party would not probably have near the momentum if a Republican were in office. However, and I think that differs from town to town, and the smaller the town, the less control there is. But I work with and promote the Constitution Party, which is a third party, very small. And I had a little booth there. And for the, you know, people would stop and I would just say to them, look, GOP stands for Group of Prostitutes. You know, people talk about returning the Republican Party to its principles. It has not had principles since Abraham Lincoln. They don't know what principles are. They only understand winning. And I would just get absolute agreement with every person I talk to that they're a bunch of political whores. They don't know anything about the Constitution. They only understand winning or losing. And
hey, and it's funny that you should say that. I was just watching television the other day, and some recent candidate in some county, I think, like that, her speech was, I think we can win, and we've got a good chance at winning, and winning's what we're going to do, and I really believe that we can win, you know? That was her speech!
How exciting. Well, I mean, there's no controversy there.
Where's the principle? Where's the intelligence? Where is the policy? It's all just about freaking winning. And it, you know,
be negative, Vinnie. She's
what are you
she's
winning
a positive
for?
Person.
What are you winning for,
person?
Honey?
Yeah, come no, on. These people are fools, man. It's like the whole system that we're operating within is flawed. Like Daniel, what's your theory on the founding of America? And how it was founded by Freemason guys with integrity, and it seems anyway. I know some of them were into slavery and things like this, but that was kind of more of the culture of the day.
Sure.
Not
sure
making excuses for them, but
no.
But what do you think
fact.
Of like Abe Lincoln? So Abe Lincoln does one thing, Washington does one thing, and then these modern day, what some people call speculative Freemasons like Bill Clinton. Do another and totally disregard that constitution. Why do you think that is? Why aren't they praying allegiance to their brotherhood?
Let's keep in mind that Abraham Lincoln is a good 90 years off from the American War of Independence, and I do believe that the American Founding Fathers were a group of people who are an anomaly in history. Yes, they were, for the most part, Freemasons. I recognize that. I do not believe that they were, in fact, Illuminati. George Washington wrote on the subject of the Illuminati. He was very distrustful of them, and they come more from the French branch of Freemasonry, not the British or Scottish branches. And I'm not bashing the French, Vinny. I heard that, but the
Vive la France.
I went up to New Hampshire and Concord a few years back to hear some speeches on April 19th, which is the day of Lexington, when the they had the battle there at Concord Bridge and there at Lexington with the British.
It's also the day that Timothy McVeigh supposedly blew everything up.
Yeah,
what
so
a coincidence!
Say. So they say. At any rate, I was standing there. I wanted to visit what has been called in our textbooks the Cradle of Liberty. I was looking forward to it, you know, because this is some kind of a sort of a sacred ground of some sort. And as I stood there and I looked around at the historical buildings and the little tavern and the statue of the guy with the Minuteman with the plow and the rifle and the grass, and it dawned on me that this was not the Cradle of Liberty. Yeah, this is where the spark was cast. But that Cradle of Liberty really was 150 years of fathers reading the Bible to their children every morning and every evening. And out of that came an atmosphere that was different from anything in the history of man. And they had a biblical conscience and awareness of who is God and who are we in relationship to God, and that there are certain principles that are biblical. Don't steal, from which you derive private property. You know, respecting parents, respecting God, don't commit adultery. These are biblical things, and these morals, which found their way into the laws, and they're there in most countries. Every country has moral precepts, had a tremendous impact on them. But you had also a group of brilliant, brilliant men, with people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry. These guys rubbed each other. They were all strong and had sharp edges, and they rubbed off a lot of sharp edges, and they came up with some tremendous compromises. And it's limited government. And a lot of people believe, and maybe I could be one of them, I suppose, who thinks that they should have listened to the anti-federalists instead of the federalists. But we had the seeds of our own destruction, because it only works for a moral people. Freedom works for a people with morality. It does not work for an immoral people. And when you finally figure out that you can vote money out of the public coffer of public funds into your own pocket, that's the end of it. There can be no more freedom, because all of a sudden it's, how can we rip off the other guy? And so I think that morality has to play a part in it, even though my libertarian friends don't like for me to say that. They're my I sometimes call them my libertine friends.
What's talking about Civil War? What's your take on Albert Pike?
Oh, Albert Pike, good old Dr. Pike. He was a general, of course, in the South, but he was also the head of the Masons, and I think that he was very much into the Illuminati side of things. I don't think that it, by that point in time, he was the Grand Lizard or something, wasn't he? I forget what the title was, but
yeah, he was Grand Mason of Supreme Mason of United Grand Lodge, wasn't he?
Right, something along that line. He wrote a book. Yeah. He wrote a book called Morals and Dogma, and I have a copy of that book. It's very hard to come by, but I was in a used bookstore in Austin, Texas, and I saw this book lying there. I think some guy died, and his wife sold all the books to the used bookstore, and I beat the Masons into the to the shelf that day, and so I grabbed it for $50. And, well, they do. They go in and buy these things up so that they don't reach the public. And
really?
Absolutely. They do that all over the world. They frequent them.
Yeah, what book did I get my hands on? A Tragedy and Hope. Yeah.
I've got a copy of that. Can you not find it?
Yeah. No, I got it. Carol Quigley's book. Yeah, 900 pages or something.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, and he was very pro New World Order, but he told some things that sort of spilled the beans.
It's amazing how well documented tyranny is. You know, people who do things on the light and all of that, they forget to keep records. Yeah. But people who do dodgy stuff, they keep heaps of records and then focus on destroying them when they become inconvenient.
Yeah, because honest men don't need to keep records. You know, they shouldn't have to. You know, you keep a little diary maybe, but you forget.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, you don't even need contracts with most people in order to do business with them. You know, it's like on the honourable word of a gentleman, and this is something that I believe is essential in a moral society. And I don't want to talk like I'm some moral authority. You know, I'm talking about just in general honesty, integrity, and honour. Okay. Honor for one's people, honor for one's family. Okay,
and one's own word. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and if you don't live up to your word, you have to apologize and have a dang good reason why. You know, you haven't lived up to your word. And the politicians have lost every single conceivable shred of honor that they ever had. And today, we're at the pinnacle of unhonorable leaders and politicians with Barack H. O'Barry. And we'll be right back after the break at thefinnyeastwoodshow.com.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam. Around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Finney Eastwood Show with Will, and our special guest for today has been Daniel New, the father of Michael New, who refused to wear UN colours, and who is coming at us live from a farrier station in Texas.
That's correct.
Now tell me, we've got this problem with sovereignty at the moment, right? And I'm convinced that the idea of sovereignty is very similar in the minds of the people of New Zealand as they are even in the people of India and the United States. But in America, it's slightly different because there is a specific legal requirement. It's called the Constitution, right? And yes. It's only for a just and moral people. Do you think that in the main, after all this social engineering has been going down, that America has remained a just and moral people?
Yes, if you don't judge the country by its leaders, but by the people that you work with and your neighbors and the people you meet in the street, I do think America is a just and moral country, as I do think New Zealand is, and I think Australia is, and Great Britain is. I'm not going to go so far as to mention France in that conversation, but you might. I suspect that the average Frenchman is as well. But let's don't be judging the country by our leaders, please. I know you wouldn't want us to do that about your country, and hopefully you'll not judge America by the last 16 presidents.
Yeah, and this is the interesting thing, isn't it? People, there is a growing sentiment of hatred towards the United States, and this kind of kicked off during the Bush era with the invasion of Iraq. It's extremely unpopular internationally, and I try to make the point to people that, hey, don't hate Americans, okay? Don't even have hate, really. Just understand the simple and obvious truth that whoever the heck is at the helm of America isn't a real American, okay? They don't embody the spirit, the moral, and the ethic, and the community spirit that Americans have.
No more than Vladimir Putin represents the average Russian. I mean, good grief. Or the Pope represents the average Catholic, for that matter. You know, these guys at the top have lost all touch with reality, but they are in control. Look, I lived in New Zealand in 1981 or 2 and 3 or something like that, 2 or 3 years there, down the Wairarapa, down in north of Wellington. And there was anti-American feeling then as well, of course. Not as much as there was anti-Australian, but there was quite a bit.
Oh,
I had to laugh.
It's so funny, eh?
Yeah, we had a friend who came over from Australia. He was in my home, and a local Kiwi farmer's couple came over to the house. And the only word that passed his lips as they came in, and they said, good evening, and he says, g'day. And she looked at him, and she said, you're not from here, are you? You're from Australia, aren't you? Yes, I am. She says, they bowl underarm there, don't they? Oh, it was bitter in those days. You remember that incident, of course. No, you don't remember it, but you've heard about it. You remember the incident?
The underarm bowling incident.
Yes. Mm. Yes, it had just happened, and he could not find a hotel in Auckland because he was an Australian. It was hilarious. A Frenchman had no trouble.
Now, this was silly. This is silly, isn't it? Yes. In fact, I had a comment from one of our listeners, Lars, yesterday, that he was looking at one of his friends' Twitter feed, and they're going all about, you know, killing each other, and it's over sport and that kind of thing. And he says, yeah, great, that's the new patriotism. That's the new political involvement. Just keep yourself completely involved in sports and ignore everything else, you know?
Yeah, it's played out through sports, all that rivalry and warring and all those... The good spirit of resistance is played out through the sports field, whilst we get these people like John Key just running roughshod over us. And if we get angry at these bankers, we're the weirdos.
Yeah, I mean, today the government plays you and you watch the television. It should be the opposite. You should be the one playing sport to keep yourself healthy and keep yourself social with your circles of friends, and you should be watching the government.
Well, and that is precisely the reason I have not allowed a television in my house for over 30 years. So I'm not subject to that influence.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the media game, and watching television is actually kind of part of what I do to watch what kind of propaganda that they're pumping out.
Occupational hazard, I understand that.
Yeah, I know, and what I'm concerned about is the subliminals and all of this kind of stuff, which apparently affects your brain, regardless of whether or not you're even conscious of them, you know? And I do get zombified. No kidding. You know, and be like, you know, terrible memories of sitting on the couch, having no thoughts in my head whatsoever, 100% zombified in the beta brainwave state. You know,
absolutely.
And this, TV is just absolutely brilliant for brainwashing. Why didn't I think of that? And it turns out the CIA, I think, had a part in figuring out which flicker rate, the rate in which the frames change on the television that your conscious mind can perceive versus when your unconscious mind has to actually kick in order to take over from your brain. And that happens within 30 seconds of watching television, ladies and gentlemen. Within 30 seconds, you are in a dreamlike, non-conscious, fully susceptible state.
Wow.
Brilliant.
But you work on a subconscious level. You still know that you want a beer and pretzels.
Yep. And if you're happy with your television, ladies and gentlemen, you can enter into our Vidi Eastwood show draw to win a free, all-expenses-paid, permanent vacation to a FEMA camp with all the beer and popcorn you can consume and all the television you can watch. Our guest has been Daniel New. Coming up next is the Intel Hub. So just go to theintelhub.com, mikenew.com, gardenmicrobes.com, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, and we will be back tomorrow, The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will.